And to thank you all for coming. So I was told this month at Ornava is the theme of women and Emuna. So I figured we could talk about something that brings together both. So what better basis for talking about Emuna and women is there than the Eshes Chayil, right? So what's Eshes Chayil? Where does that come from? What am I referring to? Right. Oh, so Eshes Chayil is found at the end of Sefer Mishle. And the Medrash says, right, you're right. And the Medrash says the real place it comes from is that Avram Avinu, that was his hesped, that was his eulogy that he gave for his wife Sarah, right? And that, yeah, you were not off. And it's found in the last parak of Mishle of Proverbs. So Esh Yisrael is very interesting because Esh Yisrael is basically a whole parak in Tanakh that is dedicated to describing, I don't want to say ideal, describing the valor, that's what Chayil means, the valor of a Jewish woman, right? And in there we find all the things that are praiseworthy and considered special about what a Jewish woman should work towards. So I figured what we could do is take different parts of Esh Yisrael and use them as a springboard to see exactly what that is. So there's four areas I want to focus on. So one of them is professionalism, one's family, self-respect, and the relationship with Hashem. Okay, so the very first pasuk of Esh Yisrael, so what do we find? It says, Esh Yisrael mi yimtza. What does that mean? Esh Yisrael means a woman of valor. Mi yimtza. What does that mean? Who can find? V'rachok mi pininim mechra. What does that mean? V'rachok mi pininim mechra. What does that mean? And far from riches is her worth. So the Malbim commenting on that pasuk explains there's two ways people find things, right? Sometimes you have something that comes with mitzia, yimtza, finding. Meaning, a mitzia means that you're in Yiddish it's a bargain, right? But so that you're walking along and you find something. It just happens to be there. You don't work for it, you don't whatever, and you just find it, you get it. But then there's a mecher. What's a mecher? A mecher is something you buy, something you have to work for, something you need to make money to be able to have. So the Malbim says there are two ways people get things in life. Sometimes you find something, and sometimes you gotta work for something to be able to be kone, to be able to acquire it. So the Malbim explains those are the two ways that this woman works towards something. And people sometimes think that people who have things and are developed, so it just happened from it just through a mitzia. They just were able to find it. But really, it's michra. It comes from the person's ability, in this case, the Jewish woman's ability to work towards having that, to have the ability to strive for it, right? And to really want something out of it. So what we're going to do is go through these four areas, right? And see how the Torah views the way a Jewish woman works towards having that emuna, that belief in themselves, and then becoming the person referred to in the Esh Yisrael. Fine. So the first thing I said is professionalism, right? So what is one of the themes of Esh Yisrael? Is how much she does in the real world, right? How she goes to the market and gets what her family needs, and she makes sure all the crop is coming in right, and she makes sure they have clothes, and she's out there and doing everything. So there is this false concept that sometimes you get from books that traditionally Jewish women were always only in the house, right? Only in the house and did nothing else. So if you look throughout the Gemara and all of the works of Machshava and all the Gedolei Yisrael throughout history, you see that's not the case. Throughout history, Jewish women, like described in the Esh Yisrael, were always out there as well and had to have confidence in themselves to do things. So where do we find that? Right? The most famous example in recent history is the Chafetz Chaim. Right? How did the Chafetz Chaim have any money? You know? How did Chafetz Chaim have money to live? Huh? His wife had a store. His wife had a store. Right? His wife ran the store. You know, Chafetz Chaim did not, I don't think, have a business sense. His wife ran the store. She was in Lithuania and in Poland. That was very common that women were involved in the business elements. Anyone here ever heard of the Maharsha? Ever heard of that name before? So Maharsha is one of the most important commentaries on the Gemara. In the back of every Gemara, we have a copy of, we have a section of the Maharsha. So it's one of the most difficult commentaries, one of the most important commentaries. So Maharsha stands for Morinu Harav. What did you say? Oh, so that's the Marshal. Very good. Very good. It's even harder. Okay. So the Marino of Shmuel Adlis. Right? Shmuel Adlis. So why is he called Shmuel Adlis? His mother-in-law's name, but there was no last names in those days. The Marshal lived in the 1500s. His mother-in-law's name was Adel. And his mother-in-law was like a big businesswoman. And she took him as a son-in-law. And she supported him and built his yeshiva and brought him into the business. Sometimes the Maharsha writes in his commentary, I don't have my Gemara in front of me because I'm in Lemberg, which is the big town, at the fair, selling the goods. So I don't have the Gemara in front of me to be able to quote verbatim what it is. His mother-in-law brought him into the business. And he, in thanks to her, became known, right, as a Karas HaTovter by her name. Right, that's why he's Marsha. The Aleph at the end is after Adel, after his mother-in-law. So you have throughout history, this yeah.
Isn't that going out
though,
feminine energy? Like, how isn't
that feminine energy?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe, right? Maybe it comes from there, right? 100%. Could be that it really is from there. We learn it from them. Right, 100%. I tell you, there's one more. There's another great example. Another great example of this. So there's a commentary. This is dedicated to that. There's a commentary called the Drisha. It's a halachic commentary on the Torah. It's used for all halachic decision making. So every sefer that's written of halacha, there's always an introduction. An introduction, a hakadama to the sefer. So in the hakadama to this sefer, the Drisha, which was written by, ever heard of the Rama? Right, it was the decider of all the halachas for Ashkenazim. So he was a student of the Rama, the Drisha. So he wrote a commentary and read Rebbe's works and other things. So in his introduction, he dedicates the sefer to his mother. Right, it's actually, this is the introduction is written by the son of the Drisha, who dedicates it to the Drisha's wife, his own mother. And he writes a whole description there about her. Right? And this is from 500 years ago. It's a very famous description. So he writes in there that his mother, right, the Drisha's wife, was a tremendous Torah scholar in her own right. And then when the Drisha used to bring the boys over from on Shabbos, she used to ask them questions about the Parsha. And he said she knew every Rashi ala Torah bal peh. Everything. And she would test the boys when they'd come to the house, and that she was involved in everything, in running things in the town, in helping her husband when he had the rabbinic things to do, and he was busy with other things. She would help run things that were in the kehillah. Unbelievable stuff. And he said his mother was like this incredible woman. And then after his father passed away, that she, this is 500 years ago, moved to Israel to live her last years in Israel, right? And that she also helped make money for the household. Unbelievable things. Meaning throughout history we find, right, throughout all the works of the Gedolei Yisrael, that there was always a concept that women also were involved in the real world. And they weren't just only at home. They were, right, the Akaras Abayas. They were the ones who were a model for the family. But they also were involved in the outside. So today, right, where we have this idea even more, because of the society we live in, right, and because every household needs two salaries today, and because people need to be able to get it. It's not a new thing today. It's not like we're compromising by doing so. And that's why in the Eish HaSchayil, right, as we said, is the first source of what it means to be a Jewish woman and what the strength of a Jewish woman is. You see that's one of the main themes that's underscored, is the fact that this woman described in Mishle is doing all the stuff that's needed, right? So that's something that's very important. There's an interesting, you can see it on YouTube. There was they had a Yom Iyun in Bnei Brak, a number of, probably 12, 15 years ago, with a Steinman. So they had, it was about chinuch for children. So they had like an hour of just asking him questions, and he would give answers. And if you ever hear Steinman speak, I heard a few times, he's very funny, very, very funny. So they're asking Steinman these questions about the house, this with the children. So one of the things, so then one of the people gets up, and he asks Steinman, there used to be a concept called the Yiddish Mama. The woman who would stay at home and she was with the children, said, and today, because of the economy, because today we can't have it anymore and the women have to go out there. So he asked him, do you want to know from the Rashi, from Steinman, what's the correct balance? How much should she be at home? So Steinman says, he like smiles and he says, they were speaking in Hebrew, right? Kol shi pachot babayit yoter tov. The less she's at home, the better. She'll be happier. So he says, and the whole crowd like was, right? And he says, it's the truth, right? He says, I can tell you from experience, because this idea of women having to go out and having a confident sense, like Eish HaSchayil describes, of being professional, so that's not a bad idea. Yes? I don't know that I can tell you Moshe Feinstein's daughters were not necessarily, right? Right. So that's what I'm saying. You see, really, if you look throughout history, that there was always such a practice, right? That not only out and not with the family at all and not also having their own, but that this idea was something that was valued in Yiddishkeit also. It was never considered like, you know, having to compromise necessarily to do that. Not that it's an obligation or that a woman should feel pressure to do it, but meaning that this is something that is, that's, I tell you, this year at where I teach at Hank, last year actually, they brought in Ruchi Fryer, the one that became the judge here in New York. That was the best talk for the girls where I teach that they've ever had. Here was this woman, a full woman, right? It was really Yiras Shamayim, who's a judge, right, in the court. And they were like floored by her. And there she comes in, and like to them, she looked like, you know, it's a typical firm lady who probably didn't work, right? And she was smarter than all of them, and more professional than all of them. And to see such a thing, like a role model, someone like that, and she said to them, I asked the masters what was like the lesson that they found so incredible, and she said to them how when you go to the real world, you have to have principles. And she said, even though I am in the position I am, I don't shake men's hands. She says, and that's one of my principles, and I keep to that. And people respect me because I have those principles. And they said to me, the girls, they were so amazed that this woman who was a real professional, a very firm woman, a very involved mother, that she would be able to keep such principles. And that's exactly what the Yishas Chayal is talking about, as Mishlei is speaking about. The fact that having that sense as a Jewish value of doing these things, so this is really like a very traditional idea, right? Not that the role of the matriarch and the fact that then a Jewish woman is also a mother and someone who's a role model for her children and a steady presence for them, that's a tremendous value in Yiddishkeit. But that's seen as a tremendous kindness, and that's what Eishes Chayil is talking about, that she balances. Eishes Chayil is the ultimate description of the balancing of both worlds, right? The idea that she can balance doing this and doing that, and how much her family appreciates her for that. You don't find in Eishes Chayil that when it says Kamu Banei V'Ashura, Bala V'Yahala, when the children and the husband get up to praise her, they don't say, why are you at home more? Why are you going out and doing all these things, right? They're praising her for the fact that she's able to have that tremendous balance between the two worlds. So this is an important point to learn from the Eishes Chayil, right? That first of these four things we're going to discuss, that the idea of professionalism is a Jewish value, right? And it's something that a woman should never feel in the Jewish community that she's compromising by having. That's something that can inform who they are and make special, right? And be a religious experience for them. So this is, right? So that's the first message, right? The number one very important message, that the working is something that the Jewish community should value, right? And something that if a woman wants to do, that is very much something that could bring Yiras Shamayim with Eishes Chayil. So that's number one. So the second, he said his family, right? The other side of the coin, right? So the second very prominent theme in Eishes Chayil is the fact of over and over the Psukim describe how committed she is to her family in so many different ways, right? So this is something that in our generation is very important. Why is it that it's a Jewish value to be committed to family? Why? Right? Why? Why is it something that's special, a Torah value, to be committed to family? Yeah. Right, so definitely passing on the Masorah, right? Definitely passing on the Masorah. Rav Chaim Volozhiner famously commented that the way you know someone really has midos is how they act with their family. Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes, anyone, when they're outside and when they're seen by people, can show that they have midos. But when the door closes and the people who don't see them, and when they're there and with the people that are most intimate with them, that's when you really see what the midos is. And the Baalei Mussar explained, commitment to family is the ultimate place where a person's way of and person's personal development is made. That's what Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes. It's very interesting. If you look in Pirkei Avos, Pirkei Avos says, Ezehu Mechubad, who is truly honorable? Hamachabed es Sabrios, someone who honors others. And then the Mishnah brings a pasuk to prove that. Shenemar, ve'es mechubadai achabed. The pasuk says, those that honor me, Hashem says, I will honor. So again, what did the pasuk say? The pasuk said, the Mishnah said, that anyone who is truly honorable, someone that honors other people. What is the pasuk that proves it? Hashem says, those who honor me, I will honor them. How does that prove anything? This is a famous question in that Mishnah. The Mishnah is trying to prove that when you honor others, you are honorable. So it brings a Mishnah, it brings a pasuk that says, when you honor Hashem, He will honor you. Right? So Chaim Volozhiner comments on that Mishnah. He says, why do we honor other people? Because we're not honoring them for who they are. We're not honoring them because it's your wife or your husband, or it's because it's your best friend, or because it's another Jew. You're honoring them because they have a piece of Hashem in them. because you have kavod for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are honoring people who were created, brios, beings that were created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not because of who they are, just because they are beings created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if Chaim V'lezner says, that's why it brings a pasuk, the Mishnah, about honoring Hashem, because honoring others is a part of honoring Hashem. So being honorable to one's family, being committed to one's family, is the same exact thing as being committed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just as a person feels a requirement to be committed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the family is the same exact thing as that. That's why many times the Gemara will say that, that this is about Rabbi Tarfon and others, that when their mother would come into the room, they would get up and they'd say, go rise before the Shekhinah. Everyone should get up in front of the Shekhinah. Right? The Gemara, when it talks about how much kavod they had for their parents. So why did it specifically say the Shekhinah? Because of the fact that even honor for one's parents, right? The ones who you think it's most obvious, you'd feel a personal reason for showing honor to, it's all about the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So having honor for one's family, right, what Eishes Chayil is trying to talk about, the commitment is the same as her commitment to working, and we're going to see the same as her commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all a part of the same thing. When a woman or a man, even in this case, has that commitment to family, so they show that that's how they're developing their midos. And that's why it says in Eishes Chayil, Batach Balei Bala, so what does it mean? Batach ba'alev ba'ala. What do those words mean? Batach ba'alev ba'ala. Right. The heart of her husband believes in her. What is that saying? As opposed to what? Right. Like what? So the Malbim comments on that pasuk. What do you think? Oh. So the Malbim comments on that pasuk. How do you know if someone's going to make the right decision about something? That they have the right values. Right? How do you know you could trust someone? Right? You have sometimes in my shul, so I'll know, like, this person I could trust with dealing with this, even if I'm not involved. Why? Because I know the person, I know they have their head on straight, they have the right values, they don't have a bad temper, and I know they can handle this thing. So they have a kid in class, and I'll let the kid, go to the office to do something for me. Because I know the kid's not going to go walk around for 10 minutes outside, he's going to want to come back to class, he wants to do the right thing. So the Malbim says, when you have the right values, that's when you make the right decision. So the Malbim says, what's Eishes Chayil saying? This woman has such good values. He knows she so values the right things in life. She has such commitment to her family. She wants to do what she does do for her family. She wants to do to develop herself. That batach balev bala. He has bitachon that she's going to make the right decisions. So that's what this is underscoring. It's underscoring the fact that this value of commitment to family is in a sense the same as what we said before about professionalism. It comes from a place of doing what is something that is religious. All these things are coming out of her desire to develop herself and do the right thing, right? So that's why, right? That's why we have in our society this concept of, right, like your family has to look perfect, and you have to make your family look perfect. And it's interesting. It's more and more in my generation, I find people of my age that, like, you know, if your kids do act a little bit like not right, or you know, they don't look exactly perfect, and on like Instagram doesn't like have like the perfect picture or whatever it is, that people feel, you know, like they're lesser. And in a way, what does that lead to? That leads to less commitment to family, because you get upset about your family and you don't want to be committed to it. Or it even happens when someone is old, is already grown up, and they're with their family they grew up with. And like, your sister's this way, or your brother's this way, your parent, and then it makes the commitment lessen. So that's what these psukim are trying to say. When a person has the value of commitment, so that overrides all those things, right? When a person has a sense of anivus, of humility, and understanding that commitment rises above what they feel, so they're willing to sacrifice for doing it. And that's really the greatest cover. That's why the psukim say, that Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So what happened to Moshe? Moshe came down from Har Sinai, and how did he look? His face was shining. How did anyone look at him after that? Wearing a mask. How long did he wear the mask for? The rest of his life. He wore a mask for the rest of his life because his face was shining, so no one could look at him. So he wore a mask. So Saji Gon writes, it was the rest of his life. Many of them, Mepharshim say, it was the rest of his life. He wore a mask. So where did that light come from? Where did that come from, the light? So there's a famous Medrash. The Medrash says the following occurred. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe ink to write the Torah with. Right, so the Medrash says Nishtayer Ma'at Min Akumus. There was a little ink left over after he was done, and Kodesh Baruch Hu took that leftover ink and he put it on Moshe, and that's what made the shining, the Karnei Hod, right? The shining of his face. So what's the question on that Medrash? What's the obvious question on the Medrash?
Why
So we call a velt kasha. Everyone asks this question. How is there extra ink? God gave him the ink. He didn't know how much ink he'd need. Right? So the Or HaChaim, as a commentary on the Torah, says the following. It says like this. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew exactly how much ink was needed, and he gave Moshe the exact amount. So why was there ink left over? There is one pasuk in the Torah. There is one pasuk in the Torah that describes the character of Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh, what is that? What is that? What is that pasuk? Right? So the pasuk says, "Va'ish Moshe anav ma'od mikol adam asher al pnei adama," and the man Moshe had so much humility, was so humble, more than anyone else in the world. How do you spell the word anav if you'd write it? Ayin, nun, yud, vav. How is it spelled in that pasuk? Ayin, nun, vav. It's what we call chaser. It's missing a yud. So Chaim says Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to spill ink on himself. He didn't want to waste ink talking about himself. So what did he do? He left out the yud. He left out the yud. Figured, what am I going to write? I can spell it chaser without the yud. I'd rather do that. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He took that extra ink that Moshe didn't want to spend on himself, and he put it on him to give him kavod, to give him honor. Right? So Chaim says, when a person doesn't do things in life for honor, and they do things because they're committed to it, like Moshe was, and they're an Eved Hashem, and they want to do it, that's when their face is going to shine. Right? So that's the real message for family today, right? Because it's very hard to have a sense of commitment like it's described in Eish Hashem, and it's very difficult for a person to think they're really doing the right thing by doing so, but nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, that's the thing that's going to be the ultimate gift at the end, right? So that's the second message of family. Third one, self-respect is a very important one. This is a very, very important one, right? So what does self-respect mean? What does self-respect mean? What does that mean? Respect for yourself, right? So this is something that our society lacks immensely today. And this is something that our generation needs more than anything, especially younger people in today's world. The idea of respecting oneself and what it means to respect oneself. So what does Sein Eish Chayil? Chagr la'oz masne'a. She girds herself and strengthens herself to go out to work. So the Mefarshim say, what does that mean? I mean, when a person goes out and has to live, it doesn't just happen. You have to be strong. So she strengthens herself and sees the Mefarshim say the value that she has to give to the world and able then to go out and do it. Right? So this is what Rav Tzadok writes. Rav Tzadok says, just as much as a person has to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rav Tzadok HaKohen says, a person has to believe in themselves. Right? And this is a very, very important klal. The belief in God and the ability to follow the Torah cannot exist inside the heart of a person that does not like themselves and does not respect themselves and does not think they have something to offer to the world. Doesn't work. Right? Only someone who is a self-respecting individual, who sees what value they have, and that they're a good person, and that they try hard, only such a person can worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and can be a good Jew. Right? And that's, everyone asked by Moshe, so Moshe was such an anav. So how did he have a sense of self-respect? It seems like he didn't respect himself. So the Sefer Chassidus all right, even though Moshe was an anav, he had humility. You see from the Pesukim, he knew he was special. But what was special about Moshe? Moshe knew he could talk to God, that's why he did it. He knew he could make miracles, that's why he did them. But he didn't think he was better than other people. Meaning, anivus, the concept of having humility, doesn't mean that you don't recognize your value. It means you recognize your value, but you don't think it makes you better than other people as a result. Right? God gave you special gifts, like he gives everyone, so you should value them. But you shouldn't think then I'm better than someone I see on the street that doesn't have those gifts. But to have that general sense of you being a special individual, right? So that's something that's extremely important. They say that Rav Simcha ben Rav Pershischa used to say, if I am not I, and you, right, if I am not I, and you, excuse me, if I am I because you are you, and you are you because I am I, then I am not I and you are not you. But if I am I because I am I, and you are you because you are you, then I am I and you are you. That's a famous, they say in Yiddish it sounds even better. So what's the point? A person has to have a sense of that they're special, right? And that they have to listen to themselves and they have to respect who they are, not always listen to the outside and not listen to the messages of society. Many times, I've had in my shul, so young women in high school also, will feel there's so much peer pressure, especially on women today in society, more than More than there probably ever was, right? And there's a lot of studies written today about the development in American Western society of young women and how difficult it is because of the focus on the material and the focus on looks and the focus on, at a young, young age, right? The tremendous pressure. So it's very hard, right? Understandably, to develop a sense of self and not constantly listen to the outside and to listen to one's own neshama, which the world does not acknowledge exists, right? So, in reality, this was the very first sin that we did as humanity. So, what was the first sin done by a person? Exactly, it's Adas, Adam HaRishon. So, what happened with Adam HaRishon? It's one of my favorite words. So, Adam HaRishon was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Eat from the Eitz HaChaim, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. So, Adam HaRishon comes, and what does he do? He eats from the Eitz Hadas. Okay. Why does he eat from the Eitz Hadas? Because the Nachash comes to Chava, the snake, and he tells to eat, and then they go and eat. So then, the Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down into the garden. And Adam hears him, and he hides. And then what happens? What does Hashem say? Hayeka. Right? What does that mean? Where are you? Strangest Pasuk in the entire Torah. Right? God doesn't know where Adam is. Right? Which is very weird. So the cook explained, it doesn't mean he was asking, where are you located? He was saying, Ayeka, now where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where is the Adam that I created? And Rav Kook explains, what was he saying? This is the first time a human being listened to society. Listened to the Nachash. Adam had no desire to eat from the Eitz Hadas on his own. It's because the Nachash came and told him to. It's not like he was like, oh yeah, let's go from the Eitz from the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash put the idea in his head. And if he just would have continued being who he was, right, and not listening to be someone else, it never would have happened. So Cook says this is the whole sin of humanity. All sin arises from the fact of listening outside ourselves. And that if Jews would listen to their inner self, who they are, what they really feel, and respect themselves, so that wouldn't happen. That's why it says the Navi tells us, Ruach HaPeinu Mashiach Hashem. What does Ruach HaPeinu Mashiach Hashem mean? What does that pasuk mean? Ruach HaPeinu Mashiach Hashem. The breath of our nostrils, of our face, is Mashiach. Isn't that a strange pasuk? So Rav Kook says, what does that mean? Meaning, when the Jewish people will be true to themselves, Ruach HaPeinu, not looking to have this one and that one, and listen to do like this and like that, and to listen to society's pressures, but we'll listen to who we really are and respect who we really are, because listening to others is because you don't respect who you are, right? So then, that is the nitzot, that is the spark of Mashiach, right? So this is the whole essence of what the Eishes Chayil is talking about, right? It's saying that when Chagor Loz Matzna, a woman, especially in today's society, has to respect who they are, what they have to offer individually, and not to feel the pressure of looking outside. That's why immediately after that it says, Sheker Achein Behevel Ayofi, right? So it's not saying that there's not a value to feeling good about how you look. What is it, right? What is it saying? It's saying that's not the focus of existence. Our society today says the opposite. Everything is Chein and Yofi. You'd be a terrible person, but everything is chayin and yofi. So sheker chayin v'hevel yofi translated today means don't look at Instagram, right? That's how you translate what it means today. Meaning, don't focus on the other things. So you know what all the studies, I always say this, but all the studies that are coming out about social media use, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, everything, the level of depression within the hours after use of social media is so much higher. Blood pressure is higher. Right? It's crazy. Heart rate is higher. Like, it literally has a physical, forget an emotional effect, a physical effect on the human being. The complete chaos that focus on the outside puts a human being into is so unhealthy, right? It's like unbelievable. This tremendous focus on everything the outside. I have girls in my classes who, if they don't have, a lot of them have Snapchat. So from my now understanding, I've never actually seen Snapchat, but I know all about it from my kids in my classes. So they have like a story on Snapchat, a story, and they update it each day with pictures about like what they're doing in their life. If they don't have a good picture for one day to put up, it's like the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It's like they can't like live. They need, because like, so I once asked one, I was like, why do you feel so bad about it? She said, because no one's going to want to look at my stuff then. Right? So the fact that it's all stage and all sheker and none of it's real, okay. But no, So this is exactly what it means, Sheker Achim Behavah Yofi, meaning the outside, focusing on all these things and not focusing on who you are, is an act of not respecting oneself. If one respects oneself, I tell my kids all that the time of that in class, your thoughts, you don't have to write them all the time to other people. You don't have to tell other people them. They're for you. You can think something and not say it. You can have an idea and hold it inside and let it develop. You don't have to do things for the outside world. You can respect yourself, and when that grows, you'll be able to be even more impressive to other individuals, right? And that's exactly what the Ish Chayil is talking about. Yeah. Sheker Achim means beauty is false. V'hevel ayofi. How do you say chayin and yofi? How does the article say chayin and yofi differently? There is no English word for chayin. It just doesn't exist. Right? Chayin is one of those words you can't translate. What's the nearest thing to chayin would be? But it's not charm. It's not. I would say appearance. Appearance is false, and beauty is a waste, right? What really matters, the next is Isha Yiras Hashem, a woman that is in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? That's the right meaning, the fact that that's the focus, right? Our focus in life is not the other, right? And that's the real meaning in the end of Tznius, right? Tznius doesn't mean covering beauty, it means valuing beauty. That's a very key point. It doesn't mean covering beauty or hiding beauty. It means valuing it in the correct way. That's the whole, this is the whole concept that the Ish Chayil is coming to say. So the one very important point that comes out of this whole idea is that sometimes we try to control other people. People do this in families, though. We try to control others. Why? Because we don't respect ourselves. We try to control other people because we think we need to control them because we're not good enough the way we are. So to make ourselves feel better, so we try to control other people. Spouses do it to each other, siblings do it to each other, parents do it to kids sometimes do it to parents, right? All these things. So the whole concept of self-strengthening is also to be a more well-adjusted person. That's what they say of Yisrael Salanter. Yisrael Salanter, he was an older man. It's said about a few gadol in the story, but the older ones say it about Yisrael Salanter, that he told his students at the end of his life, when I was a young man, I used to think I would change, right? Change the world. So I realized the world was too hard, so I said I'd change my country. And then I said, I couldn't change my country, so I figured I'd change my town. And then I couldn't change my town, so I figured I'll try changing my family. And I could try changing my family. I couldn't change my family. Then one day I was looking in the mirror, and I said, Yisrael, why didn't you change yourself? He says, you know what I did? I developed Musar, and I changed myself. And what happened? My family changed, and my town changed, and my country changed, and then the whole world changed. So this is like real MS of the story. The fact that when a person respects themselves, they change those that are around them, right? By the way they are, right? I told the story here of Rav Cook on the kibbutz. Someone remind me, did I tell it ever here? So I have to tell it tonight. I just thought of it. I have to tell it now. There's a true, 100% true story. Rav Cook was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. What is today Tel Aviv? So one of his jobs was to go around. In those days, there were all these kibbutzim that were around Tel Aviv. Today, Tel Aviv, it's all cities. This is now almost 100 years ago. And not only were they not religious, there was like no Judaism allowed, right? You know, it was like really, really very, very not religious. So he used to go around trying to get the people to come back. He had this idea of Kirov before anyone ever thought of Kirov. So it was one kibbutz he went to in the 1920s, the Ganya, which is a very famous one. And he came to the kibbutz for Shabbos, and he said he's going to stay at the kibbutz for Shabbos. So he comes in, and the people see him, and he asks for a place to stay, so they weren't going to be disrespectful. They gave him a place to stay. So Friday night comes, and he comes to get together a minyan. So no one was interested in davening. So he went back to his room. He davened on his own, and he came to the chadar ochel, the cafeteria. And he came to sit in the cafeteria, and he brought in his challahs, and he had some wine he brought with him for Shabbos. No one sat with him. You see him come in. He used to wear like a big kaftan, which is like almost like a strimal. And he came to sit in the room. He made his kiddush in a motzi. Looking at him, people. Finishes, leaves. The next morning he wakes up, he comes out, everyone's working in the fields with their animals and heart, whatever, and he goes and tries to get a minyan. No one's interested. He goes, he davens on his own, he comes into the lunchroom at lunch, he brings his challahs, his kiddush, everyone stays away from him. Comes Motzei Shabbos, and Motzei Shabbos they used to take a break, the people from working, and they used to get together, because even though they were all in the cheder, all these people, they knew Motzei Shabbos is like a time to hang out, right? So they came together and they used to schmooze and dance. So Rav Kook came, and he walks in, And he was from the same part of the world as all of them, from Poland, Russia, Lithuania. And he sits down in the room and he starts talking to people. And of course, they had a very magnanimous personality. He was very personable. So he starts schmoozing, and they all start schmoozing, and they talk about life in Russia, and what it was like making Aliyah, and their life. And then it comes to the dancing, of Cook dancing, and they're all dancing around him and having this incredible time. So the next morning comes breakfast. He comes into the Chadar Ochel, the cafeteria, and he brings in his food, right? And then they all come around him, and they want to sit with him, and they eat there. So it comes midday, he has to go back to Tel Aviv. So he's leaving the kibbutz, and the heads of the kibbutz are all with him, and they're walking out, and they're thanking him so much for coming and asking him to come back. And they hug, and they kiss, and he starts leaving. And as he's about to walk away, he turns back around and he says to them with a smile, "B'pam haba'a nochal b'yachad." The next time I come, we'll eat together. Right? So that day, they kashered the kibbutz. True story. They kashered the kishon. They brought in someone to kashered the kishon, the kibbutz. Why? Because when a person in themselves has a sense of respect and confidence in who they are and doesn't try to change others, it's amazing the effect it has on other people. Right? That's the whole idea of this, what the Eishes Chayil is talking about, right? The ability to respect oneself, and that's what changed, and that's what is so praised about this woman. Right? So the final message is the message of the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And that's towards the end of Eishes Chayil. Isha Yiras Hashem Hitasal, the woman who has awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We translate Yiras Hashem wrong. It doesn't mean fear, what we mean fear in English. Fear in English is like, I'm afraid. You should not be afraid of God. You should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not like whatever. He's not like your buddy, right? But fear, right? You want to run away from someone you're afraid of, right? I mean, if someone you're in awe of, you want to be near because you want to learn from them, right? So that's what Yiras Hashem means. So what's the pasuk saying? So the pasuk saying that a woman, it's very important for her to have her own personal relationship with God, right? Sometimes we're told in school that our relationship with Hashem should be either as a daughter or as a mother, almost like not our own individualized relationship. But what the pasuk is saying is that what's praiseworthy about this woman? She has her own individual relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what she does, right? And everything she's doing is for that goal, right? And she has that ability to bring the meaning of Yiddishkeit into her everyday life. So a very famous psychologist, Viktor Frankl, came up with a form of therapy. You know about him? What do you know about him? Yes, man's search for meaning. Right. So he developed a type of therapy called logotherapy, which is basically religion. But basically, he was a Jew who survived the camps. He's not religious, and he developed this concept that all people, to find happiness in life, not happiness, satisfaction in life, they need meaning in their lives. And he used his experiences in the camps to show that how people, even in the concentration camps, were able to still maintain a sense of satisfaction because they had meaning. And that was different than forms of therapy before, that like you need to do certain things, you need to have certain things, you need to make certain changes to be happy or be satisfied, that you need to have a sense of meaning, of greater purpose in life. Well, meaning Yiddishkeit, right? So that's what these psukim are describing, having that sense. So how does this woman have that sense? So we have this term in Judaism. What is it? Eved Hashem. What does it mean to be an Eved Hashem? What's the literal translation? Servant of Hashem. Where's the first time that's used in Tanakh? I don't know. First time the term Eved Hashem is used in Tanakh. Huh? When is that used by Moshe? At the very beginning of Sefer Yoshua. The very beginning of Sefer Yoshua, it says, Yoshua took over after the passing of Moshe Eved Hashem. Moshe, the servant of Hashem. Okay. So if you look in the Radak, Radak is an important pshat commentary. So Radak says, everyone has to know this Radak. He says, what does it mean, Eved Hashem? Mi shesam kol kocho, v'kavanaso, v'kol hashkachosav, b'shem yisbarach. Someone who puts all of their intentions in life, and all of their goals in life, and all of their abilities into God. V'af b'hisasko b'inyanei ha'olam, and even when they're involved in mundane matters, in the things you do on a daily basis, going to work, going to school, balancing your checkbook. Does anyone do that anymore? Balancing your checkbook, paying your bills, all those things, Miskavin la'avodas hakel yisparach yikare Eved Hashem. Someone who, even at those times, has kavana to be an Eved Hashem, to do it for Hashem. The mundane things, that is what's called an Eved Hashem. So the Radak defines the term Eved Hashem, right? So what is an Eved Hashem? In a way, it connects everything we said. It's somebody who brings everything they do in life together as a religious experience, right? As something that is a part of who they are. And that's an extremely important message. And that's what the Eishes Chayil is saying is important for a woman to do, to bring the physical and the spiritual together, right? The Mefarshim say it's like a Havdalah candle, right? It's supposed to be one flame that is a twirl of the two of them together, right? The regular, we have this idea in Western society that what we do on a daily basis is not religious, and then when we're in shul, it's religious. And when we are in school, that's religious. But when we're outside, so that's not a religious thing. Let me tell you something. It is a much greater avodas Hashem when someone goes to work and they're honest than when they daven Shmoneh Esrei. It is a much greater avodas Hashem. It is a much greater avodas Hashem when someone gets up at 3 a.m. to get a crying baby than when they wake up at 8 a.m. and well-rested and go to a shir. It's a much bigger, right? It's much bigger avodas for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because when a person, like the Radak says, dedicates even when they're in the regular world to God, that's when you're in heaven, right? Not when you're just like plugged in. When you're even not plugged in, you plug yourself in, right? That's the real way. So that's exactly what is being described here. They say, right? They say that that Rabbi Saul Salanter told a student that came to him, and he said to him, Rebbe, if only I had the head of Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam. I'm sorry, the Midos of Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam was one of the great students of Rabbi Saul Salanter, and the head of Rabbi Itzel Peterberger was one of the other great students of Rabbi Saul Salanter, and your character, Saul Salanter, he says, then I'd be a great person. So he said to him, you're going to be a good person with your head and with your Midos and with your character, right? When a person recognizes that they are able to, write in their everyday life, make everything into a religious thing, that's what's so important. Right? And the other point that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us, and something that's very important in today's world, and I hear young mothers talk about this, and single women talk about this all the time, is recognizing through our relationship with Hashem that we don't have to be perfect, right? The Kodesh Baruch Hu, what's the greatest thing He does? He forgives us. He forgives us. Where do we see that? What does David HaMelech say? Ki imcha haslicha l'man tivare. With you is slicha, with you is absolution, l'man tivare, so that you will be feared. So the Malbim explains, what does that mean? The Malbim says like this, you will never find the word slicha, which means absolution, in Tanakh, between people. Every time people forgive each other in Tanakh, it always uses the word mechila. What is mechila? To forgive. Slicha, mechila means I forgive you for what you did. Slicha means I absolve you. It's as if you didn't do it. It doesn't matter to me. So the Malbim says it's impossible for people to do that. People are unable to completely absolve someone else of something they did to them. We always hold something inside. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only being in the world that can totally absolve somebody. And He really, when He forgives you, He's like, it's fine. It doesn't matter anymore. Right? So the Malbim explains, Ki imcha slicha. You are the only one that has slicha l'man tivarei, and that's why we are in awe of you. And that's why we love you. Because you are the only one with slicha. So what do we learn? We learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our relationship with Him that we're supposed to be forgiving of ourselves. That we're not perfect. And that we make mistakes. And that we do things that are not always good, right? But that it doesn't make us any less of who we are. And that Yiras Shamayim, having Yiras Hashem, is the number one thing that teaches us that. It's in a way ironic. We think of Yiras Hashem, we think of Hashem, we think of perfection. And we should be perfect. But really Yiras Hashem teaches us we're not perfect. We shouldn't be perfect, and we don't have to be perfect. The lady that came to me recently was a Balas Tshuva, who's like trying to strengthen whatever. She was telling me how like I didn't keep Shabbos last week, and like 2 weeks ago also, because it was like two. And she's like finished crying. She like, felt terrible. So I was talking to her, and then she said, you know, I was saying like it's okay, like don't worry about it. So then she was saying to me how she has a business, pretty successful like side business. And she said, you know, I got for Shabbos a non-Jew to like run the business for Shabbos, so I don't have to be involved at all. The answer was, I don't do anything for it. So I sit there, I'm like, you're telling me the whole time that like you made these few mistakes, and like you made this huge change, like you have no involvement in your business anymore for Shabbos, right? Because that's how we think. We think like the bad things do, so that's what defines us. And like when we do good things, it doesn't really matter. So the point is that Yiras Hashem teaches us that it's the imperfection that makes us special. Borei nefashos rabos v'chasronan. You ever translate that to yourself? What does that mean? Creates nefashos rabos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates great souls. What's v'chasronan? And their lackings, right? We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu we have chasronas. That's what we learn. That's what we learn the most from, right? So this is the whole idea of what the Eishes Chayil teaches us. It teaches us that A woman being outside, being with her family, being a self-respecting individual, and having someone with Yirat Shamayim is all one thing. That's the way, that's the emunah that is unique by the Jewish woman, the ability to balance all these things, and to recognize that not having perfection and balancing all of it doesn't matter, and not being perfect doesn't matter, and the fact that they're able to have a daily basis of doing what they do, and having kavanah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that's what's most important. So, and that's really, this is, like we said, this is the spark of Mashiach, right? When women are able to do that, and that's why Chazal tell us, B'schus Nashim Tzidkanios, Negalim Mitzrayim, in the Zechus of the Nashim Tzidkanios, we were redeemed from Egypt. And the Gemara explains, because they were involved in everything. They went to the husbands in the field, and they were the ones that kept the Yiddishkeit at home. They made that balance. I mean, that balance, that ability to do that, that's what is the spark of Mashiach. So I hope everyone can be inspired for their own lives and improve on their daily basis. Okay, very good. Thank you for coming.